It's good to have everyone with us this morning, especially those who are visiting with us. We are especially glad that you're here and that you've entrusted your time to us, and we value that and hope that we use that time effectively to help you draw closer to God and learn a little bit more about Him. Today, if you want to turn to the book of Nehemiah, find your way back that. If you're already in Ezra, it's just the next book, so that should be not too far to go to find that. Church growth is a major concern of churches in the United States. Much energy and time is devoted to figuring out how to get people to come to their church and to be a part of it. A lot of programs are developed, a lot of marketing schemes, consultants are brought in to figure out what people want in the community, and efforts are made and changes are made in order to attract people to come to be a part of various groups. We don't do marketing approaches here. We're very glad that you're here, and we want you to study with us and learn and think with us about the Bible. But what our focus on is predominantly here is on the people who are part of this group. And rather than trying to create superficial ways of attracting people to the Lord, we try to change character within ourselves. We try to make ourselves into people who walk according to the Lord's ways, who look like Him, who submit to Him, who seek Him with all of our hearts, and hopefully through that, that reflection of His life will be something that draws people out of the world and to be a part, want to be a part of maybe what He has to offer. We're going to study this morning for the book of Nehemiah because really this book is about building people. I'm going to try to take you, I call this lesson or these series of lessons a hand me another brick, because Nehemiah used various steps in his work to rebuild the city of Jerusalem that I think if we apply effectively or today in this congregation, it'll help build this group. It'll help create a people that are a people that are like the Lord. And I want to begin this morning, kind of difficult to make us go back. This is 2,546 years ago into the history when this took place. But I want us to go back a ways, if you would, and just bear with me as I just try to give you the historical setting for this book, where 42,360 people left captivity and went back to the land of Jerusalem, or the land of Judah, where they began to rebuild their city and their lives. In 587 BC, there was the final destruction of Jerusalem, where Nebuchadnezzar burned the city to the ground, burned the temple, and took away thousands of people into Babylonian captivity. God promised that years later, after that captivity, He would bring His people back to the land. And so in 539, Babylonia was destroyed by Cyrus the Great, and the Persian Empire gained control of the world. Cyrus was different than Nebuchadnezzar. The way Nebuchadnezzar kept people subjugated was by force and cruelty. Now, Cyrus the Great said no. He said, I want you guys to go back home. He sent everybody that was in captivity back to their homelands. He said, rebuild your lives, rebuild your temples, worship your own gods. And through that, he felt was a better technique by giving people freedom to keep them from being rebellious, as many of the people had been under Babylonian rule. 3 years later, in 536, the first colony of Jews left Babylon, and they went back home to Judah under the leadership of a man named Zerubbabel, and that story of his effort was in the book of Ezra. And then in 516, a few years later, about 20 years later, the second temple was rebuilt. In other words, the Jews went back and rebuilt their temple in their homeland, began to put God back at the center of their lives, and began to worship Him. In 548 BC, the second colony of Jews returned. By 458 BC, the second colony of Jews returned to Judah under the leadership of another man named Ezra, which we read a little bit from his book a few moments ago. And then, a little bit later, 445 B.C., a third group of returnees returned to Judah under the leadership of a man named Nehemiah. And their goal was, his goal was to rebuild the walls in Jerusalem because they're still down. There's no protection, no walls surrounding Jerusalem. And so this book is really about the rebuilding of two walls. The story of Ezra and Nehemiah. There was a rebuilding of a physical wall around the city of Jerusalem that Nehemiah worked on. And there was the rebuilding of a spiritual wall. Well, I'd say an invisible wall in the hearts of the people by bringing them back to obedience to the law of God. And so as we look through this book over the next 2 or 3 weeks, we're going to see a great construction project going on in the first 6 chapters. A wall being built and Nehemiah leading these people to rebuild their wall. And then in the latter half of the book, chapter 7 through 13, really is a restoration of a people to the Lord. They had the heart to want to know the Lord, but they weren't returning to Him according to His laws. And Ezra spends a lot of time teaching them and guiding them back to God through the law of God. And so we're going to look at this book. And I think in this book there are a lot of good principles. Great principles for leadership, people who want to build other people, and there are a lot of good leaders in this group, men and women. And we learn from Nehemiah great leadership principles of how to build others. And so, I want us to look in chapter 1 this morning. I'm just going to give you maybe 3 points, three bricks, if you will, to rebuilding. And I think I want us to see the application of how we can build a congregation, strengthen us, bring people closer to God, create unity and harmony among a group. And Nehemiah is going to be the one who teaches us those lessons. And they're pretty simple, the principles, but let's begin with Nehemiah chapter 1, and let's just read the first 3 verses. Nehemiah chapter 1 and the first 3 verses. The words of Nehemiah the son of Hakaliah. Now it happened in the month Chislev, in the 20th year, while I was in Susa, the capital, that Hanani, one of my brothers, and some men from Judah came, and I asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped and had survived the captivity about Jerusalem. And they said to me, "The remnant there in the province who survived the captivity are in great distress and reproach, and the wall of Jerusalem is broken down, and its gates are burned with fire." So Nehemiah is this fellow who lives in Persia, in Susa, which was like the capital city of Persia. And it was also the personal residence of the king of Persia. Later on, we learn that he's the cupbearer for the king in the last verse of this chapter. And he's there, and some of his brothers come. And it says it's the month Kislev, that happens to be December of their year, our year, but it's the month, this kind of their month, December, in the 20th year, and that's the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, for those who like history. If you look over in chapter 2 and verse 1, it says it was about the month, it says the 20th year of King Artaxerxes. That was the king of Persia at the time. And these brethren of Nehemiah come to him, and when they get to him, he asks them a question. He says, concerning the Jews, he asked them concerning the Jews who had escaped and had survived the captivity and about Jerusalem. He wanted to know, how's everybody doing? What's the condition of my people back in Jerusalem? I want to suggest to you, while Nehemiah's body was in Persia, his heart was back home with the people that were there. He really cared about them. 800 miles away. He's an important man. He has a very important position in this kingdom. He's a cupbearer to the king. Jerusalem is a distant city, 800 miles away. He had never met most of the people who had been a part of that city at the time. You know, it's 15 or 20 miles is a long way to drive to work today, but this guy had to go 800 miles to get to these people. And he probably wasn't going at 55 miles an hour either on the way. And he cared about these people. He questioned them about the Jewish remnant that survived the exile and about Jerusalem. I think the first step in building other people and helping other people and creating a sense of unity and harmony is people have to care about one another. And this man cared about the people, his people that were in Jerusalem. He wanted to know what condition they were in. Another passage I thought was interesting is one in Isaiah chapter 49, verse 15 and 16. I think he had the same kind of care and concern in his heart that God had for these people. Isaiah said, "Can a mother forget the baby at her breast and have no compassion on the child she has born? Though she may forget, I will not forget you. See, I have engraved you on the palms of my hands. Your walls are ever before me." God wanted his people to know that they were very important to him, that he had engraved their names on the palms of his hands. He saw them. They were before his face all the time. He cared about them. God is not some distant, detached God who has no connection with people. They were very personally or important to him, close to his heart. Do you know the city of God today is not like the city of Jerusalem that Nehemiah went to? It's not made of brick and mortar. This is not the church, this thing here that we come to. It's not the church. It's a building. But in the New Testament, the church, the temple of God, the city of God, was the people. It's human beings. And if we want Teensboro to grow and be close, then we need and be unified. The first step is we've got to care about one another. That the walls of one another needs to be written on the palms of our hands, needs to be before our eyes. We've got to ask the question, how are the walls doing here? And not talk about brick and mortar, the place where we meet, but we need to think about the lives of people here. Some people drive a good distance, but nobody drives 800 miles to get here. But we come here, and we drive and we come here and take the time to come together because we care about the Lord and about His city, about the people who make up the city of God today. And we need to ask the question, what's the status? How are people doing? How are you doing? That's step one toward growth, is that we're going to care about one another. I want you to notice Nehemiah's reaction to the news. Look, if you would, again in chapter 1 and verse 4. It says, When I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days, and I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. The news wasn't good. It said people were in misery, they're in distress, in disgrace, the walls are broken down, the gates are burned, people were vulnerable. And his reaction was that he sat down and he wept and he mourned and he fasted for some days. I mean, I think it just really depicts how much he cared for these people. So much that it broke his heart. And I think that's the quality of good leaders, is that they have compassion on others when they are hurting. One of the passages that I want you to look at is in Lamentations. If you can find that little book, it's after Jeremiah. And that's not always the case, that you find people that really care and have that kind of compassion for others when they're in trouble. Jeremiah chapter, the book of Jeremiah is just before the book of Lamentations, right after that. Lamentations chapter 1 and verse 12. After the destruction of Jerusalem, the city had been burned, the temple had been burned, the walls had been knocked down, and Jeremiah saw the way people were looking at the city. And he said, "Is it nothing to all of you who pass this way? Look and see if there's any pain like my pain, which was severely dealt out to me, which the Lord inflicted on the day of His fierce anger. Is it nothing to all of you who pass this way? He says to them, is our condition nothing to you? Do you not even care how we're doing? The walls have fallen, the city is burned, the people are carried away. Don't you even care? Sometimes that's the kind of, there's indifference in a congregation. People don't care what's going on in the lives of other people. Some people join a congregation and they're members for years and they're oblivious to what's going on around them spiritually in the lives of other people. Sometimes that's the case in families. Sometimes there's indifference in families about what's going on in families. You might remember when Eli, who had sons who were rebellious in 1 Samuel 3 and verse 13, he knew that there were problems in his family, but he didn't care. He didn't rebuke them. He didn't speak to them about their sin. He didn't care. The walls are in ruins. They were in disrepair. They were fallen. They were burned. But sometimes we're too busy with our work. We're too busy with other things. We're too busy to care what's going on in the lives of other people. At Teensboro, we need Nehemiahs. Nehemiah is a great example of somebody that cared. When we see how people are lives are affected by sin and in disrepair, it should break our heart. It should cause us to stop and ask, stop us in our tracks, should move us to compassion, should cause us to forget our feasting as it did Nehemiah and turn our attention to the Lord. The first thing we need to do if this church is going to grow and be strong and be united is that we need to care. Nehemiah cared. A congregation will not grow until members care about growth. And that's where we have to begin. But there's a second thing too, if you go back to the book of Nehemiah. Second point that we can see in chapter 1. Nehemiah chapter 1, beginning in verse 5. If there was ever a man who was proactive and a decision maker, it was Nehemiah. Later on, we learn that he'll finish building those walls in 52 days. But before he did anything, he prayed. He secured God's favor. And I want us to read Nehemiah's prayer in chapter 1, beginning in verse 4, and let's read down through verse 11. It came about when I heard these words, I sat down and wept and mourned for days. I was fasting and praying before the God of heaven. And I said, I beseech thee, O Lord God of heaven, the great and awesome God, who preserves the covenant and loving kindness for those who love him and keep his commandments. Let your ear now be attentive to your and your eyes open to hear the prayer of your servant, which I'm praying before thee now, day and night on behalf of the sons of Israel. Thy servants, confessing the sins of the sons of Israel, which we have sinned against thee, I and my father's house have sinned. We've acted very corruptly against thee, and have not kept the commandments, nor the statutes, nor the ordinances, which thou didst command thy servant Moses. Remember the word which thou didst command thy servant Moses, saying, if you're unfaithful, I will scatter you among the people. But if you return to me and keep my commandments and do them, though those of you who have been scattered were in the most remote part of the heavens, I'll gather them from there and will bring them to the place where I've chosen to cause my name to dwell. And they are thy servants and thy people whom thou didst redeem by thy great power and thy strong hand. O Lord, I beseech thee, may thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant and the prayer of thy servants who delight to revere thy name, and make thy servant successful today and grant him compassion before this man. Now I was a cupbearer to the king. It's interesting, before this man did anything, he prayed. He was moved by the situation and the condition of the people, but before he took action, he prayed to the Lord. Nehemiah knew that he really wasn't in charge of this thing. Chapter 2 and verse 12, it says that when he was there in Jerusalem, he'll say, I arose in the night, I and a few of my men with me. I didn't tell anyone what my God was putting into my mind to do for Jerusalem. Nehemiah was not the one that was in charge. He wasn't behind the steering wheel. How many of us like to be in charge here? I like to be in charge. I like when I'm the one that gets to make the decisions. But Nehemiah didn't see that it was his right to put himself in the driver's seat. Moses tried that. Didn't work. Moses went down to visit his brethren and tried to lead them out of Egypt without God being the leader. And he failed in that. Abraham tried to do that. Take matters into his own hands. And he ran ahead of God. And it didn't work. Nehemiah seems to recognize that this was God's project. That it wasn't, and he didn't say, how can I work this out? How can I fix this problem? But he went to God in prayer. You know that God will ask things of us that are too big for us to do on our own. God will ask us to do things that in and of ourselves we may feel very unqualified to do. And it's foolish to think that we can fortify this church on our own, that we can build it, that we can restore people by our own wisdom or our own ingenuity. We need to recognize that it's only by God's strength and His power that we can do that. Nehemiah knew that he was not in charge. He realized another important principle as well, that unless the Lord builds the house, its builders labor in vain. This is a serious prayer that Nehemiah offered at the outset. He was still 800 miles away from the problem. He wasn't even there. He hadn't even left yet. But in December, in the month of Chislev, when he learned about the problem, he's already praying and begins to prepare by beginning to pray to God. The other thing I noticed about this prayer is that in it he confesses sins. It's really, in one sense, it's largely a confession of sin. He admits that the reason things are in disrepair in Jerusalem is because of the sins of people. You know, if a person isn't growing and if a church isn't growing, if a church is in disrepair, there's sin in the midst of it. And so he begins his prayer talking to the Lord, or in the midst of his prayer, he talks to Him about the sins of the people. But I want you to notice also that he also speaks about his own sins. In verse 6, he says, "Thy servants confessing the sins of the sons of Israel, which we have sinned against thee, I and my father's house have sinned. We have acted very corruptly against thee and have not kept thy commandments." And so he identifies himself with the problem of what's going on in Jerusalem. You know, seeing things at Teensboro that need work and construction and rebuilding is good. But the first thing we have to do before we begin that work is a prayer that says, "I'm sorry for my part in that. I'm sorry for the sin," and confess the sin of the people and confess our own sins where we fail to do our part. Teensboro can't grow without God's help. And God can't help us unless we humble ourselves and confess our sins. I think Israel lost battles sometime because there was sin in the camp. And once the sin was removed, they were able to gain victories. But it's sin that brings things into disrepair. Well, so he had to secure God's favor. He prays, and that's what we need to begin. We need to care about one another, and we need to pray in order to secure God's favor before we're able to build effectively. And then the next thing is that Nehemiah made himself a part of the solution. Look, if you would, in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1 through 5. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1 through 5. It says, "It came about in the month of Nisan." That's the month April. So it's been 4 months now since he was told about the situation in Jerusalem. "It came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that wine was brought before him, and I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. And so the king said to me, 'Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart.' And then I was very much afraid. And I said to the king, 'Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have been consumed by fire?' And the king said to me, 'What would you request?' And so I prayed to the God of heaven." And then verse 5, "And I said to the king, 'If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I may rebuild it. I want to suggest to you the next thing that Nehemiah did is that he made himself available for the work. He didn't complain. He didn't whine. And he didn't delegate. He didn't say, let's see who we can find who can go and do this work. He's going to be a part of the solution. You know, there had been a lot of ways that Nehemiah could have rationalized and said why he shouldn't go. You know, he's 800 miles away from the city. He's already got an important job. He's a cupbearer to the king. Ezra was already there. But Nehemiah makes himself available for the work that needs to be done. We need people here who will do that. People here who will make themselves available for the work that needs to be done. We need to go to the elders and say, I'm available. I'm available to teach classes. I'm available to help with the work here. I'm available to help with those who have spiritual problems. I'm available. Give me a job. I'd like to be involved. And Nehemiah did this at great risk. It wasn't something that was with no sacrifice on his own part. He was actually asking the king to change his policy. Back in chapter 4, verse 21, the king himself had issued a decree a few years before that had stopped the work on the rebuilding of these walls. And so he's asking the king to change policy here. You know, it's easy not to get involved sometimes because we don't want to take risks. It's easy to think sometimes, I know I should be more involved. I know that so-and-so needs my help, but what's going to happen to me if I do? You know, will they accept my help? Will they reject it? Will this end up hurting me? Will it backfire on me? What if I make a mistake? And so many times we don't help even though we know there's a need because there's risks involved. There's a risk you might get falsely accused, even when you're trying to do good and help. What should I do about that? Nehemiah was afraid too. He's not some fictitious superhero. It says that he was greatly afraid when the king asked him. His face should have evidently reflected joy by serving in the king's presence. But he was so upset by the condition in Jerusalem that it caused his face to be in such a way that the king recognized that he was upset, a sadness of heart. New Testament Christians risked their lives for the gospel. They took risks. They were afraid, maybe. There's no reason to think that they weren't afraid. I think Paul said that he despaired of life in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. And it said, when he complimented Priscilla and Aquila in Romans chapter 16, he said that they risked their lives for the sake of the gospel. We need to be willing to take risks, to take care of our fears, and to go before the Lord and ask and to do the work that needs to be done. Another thing, what was Nehemiah's confidence? If you look in chapter 1 and verse 11 at the end of his prayer, he says, thy name, he says, thy servants who delight to revere thy name and to make thy servant successful today, and grant him compassion before this man. He's talking about before the king, but it's interesting to me that he calls him a man. Artaxerxes was a king, but he was really only a man under God himself. The Lord was in the driver's seat, not Artaxerxes, the king of Persia. And I thought about this proverb that says, the king's heart is in the hand of the Lord. He directs it like a water course wherever he pleases. The point is that the Lord is in control. And just like an irrigator creates different paths for the water to go through whenever he wants to water various parts in his field, he says the Lord is the one that's in charge of directing the heart of the king to accomplish his will. And so Nehemiah's confidence was not in himself, but it was in the Lord. Just like with Moses before Pharaoh, Moses had to put his confidence in the Lord and not in himself if he was going to go before Pharaoh, or David before Goliath. We have to look beyond ourselves when we prepare to take on overwhelming tasks of building and encouraging others. In verse 3 through 5, it looks like Nehemiah took courage and he asked the king for a leave of absence. Notice it says, Let the king, he says to the king, let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate and its gates have not been consumed, have been consumed by fire? And the king said, what would you request? And so I prayed to the Lord, the God of heaven. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tombs, that I might rebuild it. He's ready to sacrifice himself. I think that's important too. That he made himself a part of the solution, and that required personal sacrifice. If you get involved with your whole heart, if you plan to sacrifice, you plan to sacrifice some things that you could be doing. Perhaps things that the world would see as very important. I can't imagine anybody who would leave the position of the cupbearer to the king to go to another country 800 miles away to rebuild city walls. But Nehemiah was prepared to leave his role and to go another place. You know, that went a long way to building the confidence in the people in Jerusalem. They're going to follow him because he left something great and impressive and came down to work in hard and impossible circumstances. Moses did that. Jesus did that. Every good leader must make real sacrifices as if he wants to lead others and then expect them to follow him. Nehemiah made personal sacrifices to help the situation. And he didn't see himself as the solution. He didn't assume his great abilities made him the right man for the job. He gave credit to the Lord. If you see, notice in verse 4, he said he prayed to the God of heaven. And then in verse 8, near the end of that verse, it says, the king granted them to me because of the good hand of my God who was with me. Nehemiah's success was not his courage. Nehemiah's success was not his planning or his management skills. It was God who had given him, or whose hand was upon him. I think we don't give God enough credit sometimes. If it wasn't for me, that group would be a mess. If it wasn't for me, many people would be lost. But the truth is, it's God who is the one who drives the leader, who leads him to do the work, not Nehemiah. And he recognized, he had humility to recognize that God was the solution, and he was just making himself available as the instrument for God's work. Well, I want you to just see those three points this morning, that Nehemiah cared, that after that he prayed to the Lord to secure his favor, and then he made himself a part of the solution as he began his plans to go back to Jerusalem to help them rebuild the walls. I think that it's important that we see the Lord was wanting to rebuild his people and to rebuild their city, but he needed help. And he used Nehemiah to do that work. God needs that today in churches. He needs us to be proactive. He needs us to be decision makers. He needs us to go forth and be willing to be involved if this church is going to grow. But to do that, we need to trust in the Lord. Maybe this morning you are wanting to be more involved in the work here. The elders would love to have more people who would be involved in the work and the building of one another. We encourage you to talk to them and to make yourself available for the work that needs to be done here. If you turn in your songbooks, we're going to sing in just a minute number 269. 269. It's not really a lesson that's designed to invite people to become Christians so much as it is a lesson that's where we think more about what's going on in the group and our need to build and to encourage one another. But maybe there's someone here today who's not become a Christian and who would turn to Jesus and to follow him, to believe on his name, and to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins. If that would be a desire of anyone here present, we would have the waters prepared and we would invite you to come forward while we stand and sing our songs.